Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host Gwen Sheltimer, and our guest this week, John Cosway. Each week we visit with a local author, editor, publisher, sometimes a photojournalist or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask them to introduce us to their work, and we hope for a glimpse into their lives. Perhaps we'll be able to find out what prompts them to write, and we certainly will give them an opportunity to read to us from their work. We're very pleased to have John Cosway with us today. Welcome, John.
Pleasure to be here.
John Cosway is a Toronto-born and raised high school dropout who learned early in life that he had a way with words and pictures. His elementary school teachers told him so, but they offered little guidance in how to harvest his natural talent. Kicked out of high school twice in the 1950s for lack of interest, he embraced the news media for his self-education, delivering the Toronto Star for 8 years, working as a copy boy at the Globe and Mail for 3 years, and in 1963, thanks to Robert Turnbull, then city editor of the Globe and Mail, launching into half a century of reporting and editing at newspapers across Canada, from the Chatham Daily News to the Toronto Sun. His book highlights his numerous brushes with fame from behind the lens, from Frankie Avalon in 1959, the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Ronnie Hawkins and others in the 1960s, and Janis Joplin, The Grateful Dead, Buddy Rich and others in the 70s. In 2017, he ended his 10-year stint as a Wayback Times columnist to devote full attention to scanning his original negatives. With his 75th birthday approaching, he felt it was time to share his mostly unpublished photos and a handful of photos that had limited public exposure. He thanks Margaret McCauley, his favorite muse, editor, and Port Hope, Ontario partner, for her guidance with this timely project. So, from newspaper delivery boy to reporter and editor, sounds like a real romantic storyline, John. Tell us about how you made that transition.
Well, from the start, I was about 12 years old when I got into delivering the Toronto Daily Star, and it just felt so comfortable for me. I was on my own. Sometimes I made more money than my father, who was a house painter in the 50s. It's just the freedom of it, 2-3 hours a day working, and it just seemed to be my path in life. And I did that for 8 years. And when the time came, I got into the Globe and Mail as a copy boy. The Toronto Star, I delivered the news. The Toronto Globe and Mail, I was being dispersing of the news, you know, different departments. Robert Turnbull was city editor at the time, and he got me into reporting. So it was an easy transition at a time when people said, you don't usually go from newspaper boy to reporting. You had to go to university or whatever. But so it was smooth. I've been fortunate all my life to have a smooth transition of different jobs.
Yes, you must have had good fortune.
I did.
Yeah. So you've had a bond with print media for more than 60 years. What fascinated you about the newspaper business and writing?
It's difficult to describe the feeling of going from delivering the news to writing the news, but I've enjoyed it. It's an occupation you love. You know, when you love your job, it's not really a job. It's Toronto Sun. I worked at Toronto Sun for 19 years, and somebody told his neighbor, you know, I see you're going to work. He says, I'm not going to work. I'm going to be with friends. And it was like a big family atmosphere. And it's exciting, you know, you never know what's going to happen day to day. You're among the first to hear what's happening and major stories. So it's been exciting.
And doing the actual writing yourself was something that you enjoyed because you had certain freedom and control, or how was that feeling? Did you love writing up your stuff, the news?
I did. I've always been told I had to have a way with words, and I also like to ask questions, as Mark will back me up there. But I've always asked questions because when I was out of school, you know, I had very little education, so I asked a lot of questions, get a story where a lot of people wouldn't ask the same questions because they would assume that they knew, you know, what was happening. So,
I see. So that was useful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. Yeah. I was self-educated, asking questions on newspaper jobs.
Yes, forever curious.
Yes.
Okay, well, tell us about some of your favorite workplaces and assignments as a reporter.
My two favorite jobs of all the newspaper jobs, one was at the Richmond Review in British Columbia. Hmm. I was there for 5 years. I was the entertainment editor, and we met a lot of personalities through that. My other favorite was the Toronto Sun, which I started as a police reporter, and then court reporter, and then I was a columnist and rewrite desk person. Again, the transition was very smooth at the Sun, because when I got tired of one, I got into another. It wasn't so much like taking pictures and of celebrities at the Sun. It was more ambulances and accidents, that sort of thing. Ambulance chaser.
So how did you come to take these photographs then?
The rock and roll pictures?
Were you an entertainment editor at some point?
Not at the Toronto Sun.
Oh.
No. Okay. All my work was in the late 50s to early 70s before I started at Toronto Sun.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Tell us about your column in the Wayback Times. This is a little newspaper about antiques, isn't it?
Antiques and collectibles.
Yeah.
What happened there was I had left the Sun. I got into buying and selling on auctions and eBay.
Mm-hmm.
And I befriended a woman who later bought the Wayback Times. So when they bought it, I said, well, I could write a column for you. And she's delighted. So I did that for 10 years, writing about collectibles and drive-in theaters and mm-hmm. A wide variety of topics.
Picked up and read the Wayback Times on a number of occasions, but
it was called Causeway's Corner. It was a pleasure to write for her, but
so you really could, and you became a column writer, so you could write about anything you liked.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Well, how about reading to us from your book, Brushes with Fame?
This is chapter 8 in the book. It's titled Bad Boys, Snapping the Stones, 1966.
Okay.
Befitting their 1960s bad boys of rock and roll persona, the Rolling Stones arrived at Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto in a Toronto police paddy wagon to avoid hysterical fans on the street awaiting their arrival. One by one, Mick Jagger, 22, Keith Richards, 22, Brian Jones, 24, Bill Wyman, 28, and Charlie Watts, 25, hopped out of the back of the prisoner carrier under the watchful eyes of uniformed constables and ran to their dressing rooms. It was a safe entrance in a fan-frenzy times. It was June 29, 1966, and the Stones' love affair with Toronto was blooming after two previous concerts at Maple Leaf Gardens in 1965. The Stones had crossed the pond twice for concert tours in 1964, but no Canadian stops were included. I took photos during the October 31st, 1965 concert, but lost track of the negatives in a move in 1993. The negatives haven't surfaced, but I do have a few small prints from that concert to share. In 1966, Mick gave me the eye a couple of times while I roamed backstage unchallenged by security. My favorite photo is a shot of Mick, arms folded, looking at me like Papa Bear while waiting with Keith, Brian, Bill, and Charlie to go on stage to entertain an estimated 11,000 fans for almost an hour. Another backstage photo was taken in a small room in the bowels of the gardens where the Stones and a few VIP autograph-seeking fans mingled before the concert. One of the photos snapped is of Mick relaxing with a Coke and a smoke. On stage, the Stones did not disappoint, but police had work to do controlling the crowd. A number of eager young women wanted to join the Stones on stage during their dozen or so songs, and they attempted without any satisfaction. The 1960s Rolling Stone concerts at Maple Leaf Gardens were the start of a long and affectionate friendship with Toronto, with concerts at Exhibition Stadium, Sky Dome, Alamo Combo, Downsview Park, the Air Canada Centre, Phoenix Concert Theatre. Keith Richards got into a pickle while in Toronto for the Alamo Combo show in 1977 when charged with possession of cocaine and heroin for the purpose of trafficking. I was a Toronto Sun court reporter the day Richards showed up at Old City Hall for arraignment. I remember thinking he looked like he was at death's door, but he looked that way for the next 50 plus years. A sympathetic judge spared Richards prison time and possible deportation, giving him a suspended sentence and probation, plus a court-ordered free concert in Oshawa for the CNIB. Richards said later, Judge Lloyd Grayburn probably saved his life and his musical career.
Yes, that was a lucky break for him, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
He was always thankful
yes.
for that decision.
Thank you very much, John. Now we'll take a short break.